Good afternoon. Today is Monday, July the 30th, 212th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, proud Eureka citizen, entrepreneur, and wood splitting dude, woodsman, Rob Arkley.
Hey, Bri, how are you, buddy?
Well, I don't have bleeding hands and I'm not cramping up, so apparently a little bit better than some in the room.
I'll tell you what, that Madrone and the heat at Willow Creek have definitely dominated me.
Yeah. you do appreciate, though, my first question was it this year's Madrone?
Yeah.
Or were you really stupid?
No,
yeah.
No. 4 days ago, I split, I think, 40 rounds that had been sniped 3 months ago.
Oh.
Didn't work.
Yeah.
Very well. No, it worked, but I mean, my hands paid the price.
The word doing means something now.
It was awful.
It goes backwards. Yeah, okay. This afternoon, we're not going to talk about the techniques of wood splitting. However, we'll start, at least, talking about regulation, the environment of regulation, the cost of regulation, and what compliance really means for larger businesses and smaller businesses.
Wonderful.
Well, that's not a word I would use, but we'll find out how he integrates that one when we come back.
Education's important. They need to hear and know.
I'm Mark Viette with today's garden tip about not being a prunomaniac. The conscientious gardener needs to know that each kind of plant has its own best time to be pruned. Avoid shearing flowering plants into shapes which really look unnatural. Thin flowering shrubs with a hand pruner. I'm Mark Viette with today's garden tip.
You've got to get up pretty early in the morning to hear Mark Viette and his wealth of gardening knowledge. 5 to 7 a.m. Sundays on KWSW 980.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times 313. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Rob Arkley, but before we do our quote this afternoon.
And this fits in perfectly with our discussion today. There is no security on this earth. There is only opportunity, by General Douglas MacArthur.
Physics probably comes into play a little bit, too.
No, I don't buy that.
Don't stand in front of that loaded gun.
Or that
sun.
Or the hammer, or the mall coming down.
Yeah. when people, let's go back a couple hundred years. Certainly there was not a lot of regulation at that point in time. Did business unduly take advantage of the lack of a regulatory environment?
Well, perhaps that's a difficult question, but you see, there wasn't the science on the environmental front to know that dumping lye in the water, heavy metals, would kill the fish. So we've been on a constant learning curve.
How about labor law?
Once again, labor law was probably an abuse, and it brought some of the regulation we enjoy today on ourselves.
Is there such a thing, Rob, as good regulation?
Of course. But remember, too much right becomes wrong. Too much good becomes bad. And I think we're closing in on that theorem.
So where do you find that fulcrum?
Well, I don't think we found it anymore. I think when you go from one extreme, no regulation, you tend to overcorrect in the other direction, which is where we're finding ourselves. And so a lot of things need to be corrected. And Washington and Sacramento, and for that matter, our Board of Supervisors, continue to pump out rules and regulations and things like that. And they're really expensive to adhere to.
I find it interesting that we seem to celebrate new legislation as sign of activity by our electeds, rather than asking, okay, well, did we get rid of any of the bad stuff? Or are we just putting more on?
When was the last time that we heard of a bill being repealed? I mean, really what we need is, I think,
an active move rather than not voting on something and it just sunsets.
Correct. Yeah. So I really think what we need to focus on is, for each new regulation and each new law, let's take something out. Let's stop where we are. We don't have to grow it. We don't have to shrink it. But let's start grading what's truly important.
Is there any groundswell for that?
I think slowly we are coming awake. We were a frog in hot water for a while. We've been removed, but I feel a real activism. I mean, look at the Clean Water Act at the Marina Center. We got sued by baykeepers for copper discharge. Well, the fact is we have more copper in our tap water here in Eureka than was down on the balloon track. So we're held to this absurd standard, and we have more copper out of the tap than exists on the balloon track, yet they had standing to sue. The regulation said they could sue, and we paid them a lot of money even though they lost money on the lawsuit. No one won on that. The environment didn't improve. So we've got all these counterintuitive regulations, and we've got to just deal with them.
An acceptable risk is a phrase that a lot of business folks have and they operate with, whether it's knowing or unknowing. Is there a thing called acceptable risk when it comes to regulation, or is it always an absolute, always a zero, always?
They prefer to be at zeros. Regulations, by definition, do not imply reasonableness. They like to create absolute standards. Anything above this discharge is, by definition, a problem. Any cutting within X feet of a water stream is a violation of logging practices. I mean, there is very little gray area anymore. And if you do find yourself in a gray area, it's probably not worth finding yourself in a gray area simply because you get sued too easily. Then you have the heavy hand of the government, and attorney fees are brutal.
So you will typically stay out of the gray zone.
You've got to. I guess if you're a small enough business, you can dare them, but we certainly don't find a gray zone. It's just no way to operate. Even though it would make you more common sense, you're effectively self-insuring against the regulatory impact when they come find you.
Is the gray zone a constant, or is it an ever-changing spot?
Part of the problem is it's always moving around. Look at your business. Your regulations move around. They're hard to keep track of.
Sure, bring that one into the discussion.
Yeah, well, huh? I just thought I had a little personal pain.
Oh, dandy.
Yeah. Well, no, look at our mortgage business. We service mortgages nationwide.
Why don't we do that after the break?
All right, fine.
Fair enough. And fine is not part of our vocabulary.
Great.
Yet. There you go. It's 3:19.
There's a brand new show on KEKA 101 Thunder Country, Country Gold with Randy Owen, Sunday evenings from 8 till midnight. It's a four-hour intensive music show hosted by the lead vocalist of the group Alabama. Country Gold will feature 13 songs per hour and highlighted music from the 70s to the mid-90s. Be sure to listen to KEKA 101 Thunder Country, Sunday evening from 8 till midnight, Country Gold with Randy Owen.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times 324. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Rob Arkley. Rob, before the break, we were talking about fines.
Yeah.
My definition, or what I've always interpreted the function of a fine would be, is to either encourage behavior modification, or if there's a risk, you know what the risk is, so you can measure it against whatever the potential reward might be. I know a bunch of guys outside of this room who said, yeah, it's a whole lot easier. You just do it and pay the fine rather than go through the process.
Yeah, ask for forgiveness.
Of years, and then you get it done and everything's, you know, all the numbers are out of whack. So it's a risk-reward benefit.
They're not playing that game anymore, the government. They will not let you ask for forgiveness. Did you see what happened with Sierra Pacific on their land? There was a fire that originated on their land. They had nothing to do with the creation of the fire. Zero. It went over onto government property. The government sued them for nearly $1 billion, making...
This is like a lightning strike or squatters or something
know.
Like that?
I don't know. Yeah. And so okay. They had nothing to do with it. And yet the government came out asking for $1 billion. You get one bad ruling from the judge and all of a sudden you're settling. And so it's just absurd. And so they stack, they make the ask on fine so high that it really, it's almost like strict liability. They discourage any conduct other than adherence. And if you're questionable, gray, they come after you with a club. It's just unbelievable.
So how do you chip away at that to bring this pendulum back towards a middle point rather than one extreme or the other?
You don't want to be at extremes anywhere, on either side. I think elections have consequences, number one. Number two, we need legislators who are not beholden to I'm really speaking that the environmentalists have way too much sway over things. They're not being rational. They don't want growth. They have a certain agenda. And so what we need to do is elect new Congress and Senate and get a new president and make sure that, you know, you rip the Band-Aid off and get rid of the people who are setting the policy.
So if you have this independent perspective, it would appear to me like the only guys who could truly be independent were those that had nothing or those who had a lot. Not the guys in between that are trying to slug it out because that of the personal vulnerabilities.
Well, I mean,
is that a fair thing we're going to see?
I don't think it's quite that way. I think if you have nothing, you're in great shape. I think if you have a lot, you're under actually more scrutiny, more attack than you otherwise would be. Look at
certainly being targeted. I mean, we've seen that with Mr. Romney.
Yeah. So we're in a dangerous path.
But if you get the middle guys, the folks who are there now, they don't seem to be immune from influence.
Well, the middle guys, I believe, are the same as the big guys. Everyone who's in there, who's not, if you're not getting anything, you're safe. If you're getting if you have something going for you, you're in trouble. And, you know, that's why this tax the wealthy thing, what a bogus argument. It'll never materially move the needle on the budget. The people who are going to pay, just like on Obamacare, is the middle class. They're just going to get crushed under these additional taxes.
And it's our lack of basic economic knowledge that allows the discussion to continue?
Don't you think there's a contempt at the federal and state levels for capitalism? I mean, a lot of these regulations.
I think there's a tension between the public and the private sectors.
Boy, isn't there. You're
I don't
right.
know if it's federal, state, local, special district. I think it's there, and I don't know if it's because lack of knowledge or fear or if it's just straight out envy and jealousy. I don't know.
Almost doesn't matter.
It results pretty much in the same.
Results in the same way. But I guess I think there's a contempt of capital. There is an envy thing. I mean, really, where's most of the money go right now? It doesn't go in the rural areas. The inner cities are just, they're falling on top of themselves. And so consequently, there's just a huge money throwing into the inner cities, and it's basically taking it from the rural and into the inner cities. And so it's a bad tension in which we find ourselves. Inner cities tend to vote very Democratic, and it's ironic to me that they vote so Democratic, yet their surroundings are falling apart. There ought to be a little causation issue here. Do we get the picture?
But then I would think you would also need to have viable candidates pointing those things out. And I don't know, in a lot of the metropolitan areas, are there viable candidates with a variety of perspectives
to
get that discussion going?
If there's a monolithic vote, a non-thinking vote, it's the inner cities. I mean, they vote one way, Democratic, each and every time. And if you listen to their elected representatives, these are not people of outstanding intellect or vision. They're just because people.
What do you think about Bloomberg?
You know, it's funny. Sherry and I were talking about him today. He is probably the third wealthiest man in the United States.
Well, we're going to have to tease it again, man.
Oh, killing me. All right.
It's 3:30.
There's never been a clear winner in the so-called battle of the sexes, but in the battle for bacteria-free hands, one half of the population is germier than the other. So whose hands are cleaner, men or women? Hi, I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and here's to your health. The research has tested 51 college students using a new detailed system for detecting bacterial DNA. But remember, most of the bacteria in our bodies is either harmless or beneficial.
Dr. Hoffman answers some of your health questions on Health Talk, Saturday mornings, 9 to 11 on KWSW 980 AM.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and information time is 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Rob Barkley. Before the break, we were starting to talk about the distinctions, and I think they're almost tangible. Metropolitan versus suburbia versus rural.
Aren't they?
Big town versus everywhere else. It's going to be interesting. Our vacation this year is we're going to drive the kid back to Nebraska.
Beautiful country.
Not at 100 degrees, it's not.
Yes, it is. Oh, your car doesn't have air conditioning?
We'll find out soon enough. Don't worry. I'll be in contact daily. I'll let you know how it's going. But there is a difference. There's a cultural difference. There's an economic difference. There's an employment difference. There's a whole bunch of differences.
More than anything, Brian, there's a values difference. There's an independence to living in a rural area. There are exceptions to that, like Arcata is an exception to that. But overall, rural areas tend to be quite independent and quite self-sustaining and don't really want handouts.
Well, just so as we see the city structure versus the city big versus city small structure, is there enough momentum, inertia, resources from the small areas to help change things, to impact the bigs? I mean, we talk about the Dakotas being laughed at, and yet they're rocking.
Yep.
We talk about the Midwest with either the Keystone Pipeline, if it happens, okay, there'll be a little bit of a shift of economic wealth. Not a whole lot. It's still yuck, 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 the Midwest where the cows and the corn, and that's it.
I believe societally we're winning this debate. We're going to change education. Education is changing no matter what anyone says. The way it's delivered, I mean, we're delivering it the way we did in 1850. Give me a break.
Gary has shared that. Eagles has shared that there's some things that are starting to happen. A lot of it's being driven by technology and by budget, but that there is a shift, there is discussion, there is a willingness to entertain where
they have
20 years ago there wasn't.
Right. No, I mean, I've been working on this education paradigm shift for a while, and so I really feel traction beginning there. If you want to see someone who's done an unbelievable job, with the help of the Fishers, who incidentally own Humboldt Redwood and Mendocino Redwood, New Orleans has a series of charter schools. The scores are off the charts. The kids are getting actually educated now, and they don't have to deal with the teachers' unions. What's wrong with that? We could use that in Eureka. I mean, because the quality and the lack of vision and future for these kids that Eureka City schools are delivering, we all ought to be ashamed of. I mean, 15% of our kids go to college? That's a disgrace. We're going to be energy independent. With Obama second term, it'll be 10 years. With Romney elected, it'll be 5 or 6. So we have great things happening. Technology's changing. We're going to implement it. And so I am of the mind that regulation's going to get less and less, and we will not continue just screwing down the screw on everybody.
Because the need isn't there, or because business practices now?
It doesn't work, Brian. The overregulation doesn't yield to better results. In fact, it yields exactly the opposite. So we're winning on the empirical fact. Look at San Jose and San Diego are not anti-union towns. They both voted 70%. Look, we're broke. We can't afford this, and it's going to go. Three more cities in California have gone broke. How many more are there going to be? It's going to be endless. So we're winning.
Looking at some of those different challenges that you mentioned, the financial with some of these cities, is it the size that has caused the implosion? Is it the lack of economic vitality that's caused it? The fact that people live outside the city and they just come in and work and they take the resources away?
No.
Or is it just malfeasance?
It's the absurdity of the contracts. You see, most public pensions are created under an assumption that the fund will yield 7% or 8%. And so there's an unfunded liability, these defined...
Just a year after year after year, or 7%.
Yep, defined benefit plans. Well, unfortunately, now we all see what you're getting in your savings account, 0.1%.
0.07.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically we're damn near paying a fee for safekeeping of our money.
Everybody's James Bond.
Yeah.
007.
Yeah, 007. And so what we're seeing is if we ever had to mark to market the yields versus the unfunded liability, the uproar would be unbelievable. And I'm working on a project now that where we're going to pass truth in disclosure on these public employee pensions. We have been absolutely raped. We can't afford it. We're not going to afford it. And when you can't afford something, something ultimately happens.
Could it be something, Rob, as simple as changing the retirement age?
No.
Kick it back four or 5 years? Is that window dressing, or is that a fundamental, but there has to be more than just that one?
Not on the public employee pensions. That won't work because they're defined benefit. So you're still actuarially growing at a logarithmic rate after a while. And if you want to see a group that fundamentally eschews any new technology, it's public employees. They just hate technology. Because look at Humboldt County. What do we have, 25 different IT systems? 25, each of fiefdom. And Humboldt State could probably normalize the database and have one system, and they could put that out in 2 years, and it would save us millions of dollars a year forever. And so the part of the problem is they don't want to get better. We're going to force them to get better. And they see it coming. They're screaming. Wisconsin was a loud referendum on that. We don't want to make war with them, but we do want them to be better and fairly compensated, but not the absurd pensions they have now.
KINS, News and Information Times, 3:42. We'll be back with more from Rob Barkley.
Water always wins. That's why there's a Grand Canyon. I'm Glenn Higgy, America's master handyman. Keeping water away from your home's foundation is one of the most important things you can do. If your home is on a crawl space, you need to know what is going on under your feet. Your home's structural integrity and your family's health may depend on it.
Listen to Glenn Higgy, Sunday morning, 7 to 8 a.m. on KWSW 980.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:46. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Rob Barkley. Rob, when we look at the different jurisdictions, whether it's states, counties, there is latitude and leeway in interpretation and application of some of these various rules and regulations. You look at Oregon, look at California. Significant difference, coming pretty much from the same general perspectives. Is there any ability to even have consistency and even playing field with the regulations so that if your company is in one county, mine's in another county, you're on one side of the state line, I'm on the other side of the state line, that we're all coming from the same point of view and dealing with the same things?
Well, I don't think we'll see it on the state level, simply because states are really
states' rights,
sovereign nations, or, you know, there ought to be separate states' rights.
In theory, yeah.
Yeah, in theory, let's live with that. Counties, I think there ought to be equal treatment. Doubt that there is. And if even just dealing like with a coastal commission, they single people out. If you make too loud a complaint, they'll nail you. And so you've got to be very careful in all levels of business. For instance, in the mortgage business, if I were known as an outstanding critic, I think that'd be bad for my business, of the state regulators or the federal.
So you kind of get dampened, or someone in your spot gets kind of dampened down, or there's a tendency for that. Just because if you're, you know, it's whack-a-mole if you get too excited?
Yeah. And it's not equal treatment. I mean, look at the Coastal Commission. I've been singled out. I'm the only person in the history of the state of California who's been fined for restringing barbed wire without a permit. Well,
that's something to put on the tombstone, isn't it?
Well, that's what they do when you're an enemy. I mean, they fundamentally view me as an enemy, and anything they do to me is fine. The problem is You speak out against the public employee unions? This is the type of application of justice you get. It's very frightening to retain your free speech rights and get an equal treatment under the law because there is discretion as to the way they apply the standards.
Is the judicial branch?
Oh.
Are they? I know it. There's appointees in that stuff, but there's at least lip service to being apolitical.
No. The judicial branch is one of the fundamental problems in that there's no predictability. I mean, the Sierra Pacific one is live a judicial example as you want to run into. Can you imagine that any of us who own land along a road, someone throws a cigarette butt on it and it forms a fire, burns over onto public land, that you had nothing to do with it? The judge found that the landowner's liable. Well, you can't get insurance for that. You can't get anything for that. It's just hard to imagine the exposure that a judge's ruling had. Now, would you win on appeals in this circuit? Who knows? There's no predictability to the law. We mediate whenever possible because it's just very difficult.
It's just the prudent thing to do.
Seems to be for us. I mean, we just got done with a mediation in San Francisco on a completely ridiculous case. And, you know, was it better than a jury trial? Probably. But, you know, people like juries because facts don't always matter.
Isn't that always the case? Perception, reality.
What do they say? Good lawyers know the law. Great lawyers know the judge.
Yeah. That kind of sums that one up pretty quick. Thanks for coming by, buddy.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
We've been talking shop with Rob Arkley. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.